it's when you're able to tell the individual stories that I think young people can understand how the tragedy of war, that it's, you know, it's obviously what was accomplished that day was so very critical.
Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please hit that like and subscribe button if you like to see the content. So today, before we get to our special guest, let's get to our weekly Patreon question. This week, I like this one a lot. So if you were a special agent, what would your code name be?
Ooh. I have no idea.
I know, it's a thinker. It's a tough one, but...
What do you got?
Oh, gosh, that's hard.
It's a tough one.
That's a tough one. That's creative. I like it, because, you know, when I think about World War II and all the spies and code names, you know, but most of the times they pick just generic kind of names. I don't know. I've got to think on that one. Hmm. What about you, Marcus?
My code name is Twisted X, and my badge number is 77.
Twisted X, 77.
Oh, okay. Ooh. I don't know.
I feel like guys would think about this all the time.
What would you say mine is?
Oh, I wouldn't even venture a guess, my queen.
I want to go with like a Barracuda.
Barracuda
422. Yeah.
That's going to stick now. I hope you know that. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. I'll
tell you what, as we go through this, if you come up with it, throw it out there.
Yeah. I'm going to keep thinking. Yeah. Right, I don't know.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming on here.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. What a wonderful opportunity. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored. And gosh, Marcus, thank you for your service to our country, and just so happy to be a part of your podcast.
You bet. You thanks for letting me do it. I'm excited about today. I've been looking forward to it. The conversation that you are going and I are going to have today about our World War II veterans is something that impacts, and I think all of us feel really that they're a special part of our life. We don't have very many of them left, so it's always great to honor them all the time. So thank you again for coming on here and doing that with it.
Thank you.
So I've read that you actually started with the D-Day organization in 2001. Can you take us back to that and how you even got involved?
Yes. You know, I have always loved history. It's just been something that even very young, I loved reading about history. I loved particularly this era of history. And I think it's because I'm actually a Bedford native. I grew up in Bedford, Virginia, which was a community that I know we'll talk about, certainly impacted heavily by World War II and the ramifications of that and the significant loss that happened here. And so when I grew up, I knew a lot of those families, and it had a profound effect on me. You know, even all those years later, there was still, I guess, you could call it kind of like a veil had dropped over the community, this kind of sadness that continued into the next generations. There was just this loss. Bedford sustained the highest per capita loss on D-Day of any community in the country. And, you know, it makes you realize all these individual families, the personal stories that they had, the loss that they felt, for all those generations, just stayed with me. And so, but ironically, nobody really talked about it a lot. You knew it was there, you knew what had happened, but there wasn't a lot of discussion about it. And so that intrigued me, and went on to graduate school in history, and got an education degree, and was really intent on teaching young people this amazing story of our veterans and what they did so that we could be here today.
So is that what you did for a career? Were you a history teacher?
No, I did get my teaching degree, but when I was in graduate school for history, that's when the National D-Day Memorial was actually being thought up and started to be built. I had just finished my graduate degree. I actually worked at another museum for 2 years before I came to the memorial, but I knew this is where I wanted to be. I was like, how perfect. You know, I love World War II. I grew up in Bedford, and suddenly they decide, you know, this national monument is going to be in Bedford. So I just felt this was where I needed to be. I didn't want to be anywhere else. I was so excited about it, and came in 2001 as the director of education, and really began working on these educational programs for young people and how we impart this history to people, you know, kids of all ages, and developing the tours that we would give, and was so honored to be a part at a time. In 2001, we still had so many World War II veterans with us. It was incredible. You know, I'd meet dozens of World War II veterans in a given day. And it was just, it's just the most gratifying thing. I can't even express how every day I would leave just overjoyed to be able to have this honor to meet veterans from all walks of life and their experiences, and loved it. And have been here ever since. 2013, I became the president and CEO of the foundation here, and continue to run it today. And I couldn't be happier. I love it.
That's awesome.
You used to be able to spot those guys everywhere. They'd wear the hats. They were the best about that. They'd identify themselves. It's like we went covert after them for some reason, and we don't wear that stuff anymore, really. The Vietnam guys are getting pretty good at it. I've noticed that. But yeah, the World War II guys, I'll go out of my way if I see one of them, because you're right. It's like it's something rare. I don't this number, but how many do we have left? Do we even?
Yeah, there's less than 120,000 World War II veterans living today, which really, when you think about the fact that 16 million served in World War II, so 16 million served during the war, and that we only have, we have less than 1% of that still living today. So less than 120,000, and we lose well over 100 a day of these veterans. So, you know, in a couple of years, we will not have many of them left. And it's been such a joy to be able to meet them and hear about their experiences firsthand. But we're at a point now where to teach our young people this history, it's up to us, up to each of us to pass on their stories, because they're no longer able to do it. But it's very important, and it's something that we have to continue.
So in Bedford, what all do you have there? You actually have a full museum. Can you share with our listeners everything that you've got?
Absolutely. So, you know, we have a long way to go. We and I'll say this, just backing up a little bit, the memorial itself. So it is it's a monument. It's beautiful. It's on 55 acres. And it was actually started by a D-Day veteran himself, John Robert Bob Slaughter. He served in Company D, 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th Division, served on D-Day. Great story, Bob. He was our founder, and Bob joined the National Guard when he was 15 years old. 15 years old, he decides to join the Guard. They need a little extra money. This is kind of, you know, at the time, he lived in Roanoke, Virginia. It was rural areas. We're talking about Great Depression era, and he just wanted to do something to help his family. So he actually joined up, lied about his age, earns a little extra money. And what's remarkable about Bob, Bob was 6'2" when he joined the National Guard. He would continue to grow while he's in training. And by D-Day, he would be 6'5". So I often tell young people that story, is that here's basically a kid. He's still growing by the time of D-Day, when he lands on Omaha Beach on D-Day. It's incredible to me. Of course, he was 6'5", so he was a pretty imposing target on D-Day. And Bob, you know, Bob witnessed a lot. He, like all of those who were involved, when he landed on June the 6th, 1944, for example, he ends up behind a hedgehog, an obstacle on the beach. And his most vivid memory is watching a young man just a few feet from him shot. And he heard that young soldier calling for a medic. The medic comes over and is helping this young man. And he is also shot and wounded. And he, the two of them, he said, were crying for their mothers. And he said every night from that moment on, for the rest of his life, that is the image he had when he went to bed at night, is thinking about those two young men who died in front of him, calling for their mothers. And it had such a profound effect on Bob. And Bob survived the war. He would be wounded. He would come back. And like so many of those veterans, didn't talk about it. You know, he tried to forget about it, as so many of them did, and lived his life. He got married. He moved on with his life. But he continued to have what, of course, he recognized many years later, because they didn't know it then, was PTSD. And it was in the 1980s that Bob realized that people really didn't know what D-Day was. So imagine this is, you know, about the mid-80s. And he's like, you know, these men, these young men that I served with, they all, you know, people have forgotten what they did on the beaches that day, you know, that so many of them died. He had quite a few from his unit alone who lost their lives. 11 from his company alone died on D-Day. And so somebody said, well, you should go visit a memorial. And at that time, there was nothing. There was no World War II memorial. There was no D-Day memorial. There was no museum. There was nothing. And so it became his goal to make sure that there was something to commemorate those who gave their lives on D-Day. And it started out as a small idea, and it grew. He got a lot of other veterans on board with him. He started a foundation. And it wasn't going very well. I can tell you that it was almost about ready to disband when the 50th anniversary of D-Day happened in 1994. And Bob started going around the country speaking about D-Day and why it was important. And a lot of people had told him to give up. There was no way he was going to be able to build this monument. But he kept going. And he was involved with Steven Spielberg and helping, you know, do some of the consulting with Saving Private Ryan, for example, and attended the premiere of that. He was very involved. And he ends up walking the beaches of Omaha Beach with President Clinton at the time. And that's really when things really got going. So it was in 1996 that Congress decided there should be a National D-Day Memorial. And they told Bob, we can name this the, you know, Nation's Monument to D-Day, but one thing, we're not going to give you any money for it. So Bob was like, fine, I'll go raise the money for it. So we are not federally funded. It was a grassroots effort by veterans who said this needed to happen. We've got to get this built before our comrades leave this world. They need to know that we remember and they're not going to be forgotten. And Bob worked tirelessly on that. This monument, you know, again, we're not part of the Park Service or any of that. It's totally donations by individuals. And it was dedicated on June 6, 2001. And President Bush came and dedicated the monument. We had hundreds of D-Day veterans present at the time. It was amazing. I just remember a sea of D-Day veterans when we asked them to all stand to be recognized. And it was a day I'll never forget. But what joy it brought Bob Slaughter and his veteran friends to know that they did it, you know, that his dream came true, became a reality.
That's yeah. Awesome.
What a great name.
Bob Slaughter.
Are you kidding me? Sergeant Slaughter, 6'5". That's a story, because those guys came in almost when they were going through puberty. So they grew so fast. That's like Captain America story.
Right.
They went in real small, then, because they all lied about their age. And when they came back home, they're all the freaking, and they're battle hardened. Mm-hmm. Which means every one of all the boys inside of them were killed. And then the man had to come back. I mean, that's exactly what happened to those guys. And you said something earlier, and I didn't think about it. When all those kids died, their parents had to be the World War I generation, correct? Around that. So they've known nothing but war. And then their kids all got sent away mandatorily and didn't make it back. So
that's right.
We don't ever talk about that. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the war stories, we don't talk about that gap, about what happens and what that does. That was a great point you made.
With summer right around the corner, it's time to gear up and protect your eyes from the blazing summer sun. I've got the shades just for you. It's Shady Rays. Imagine this, you're out soaking up the sun, whether it's hit the waves or you're trekking the trails. What's my go-to accessory? Without a doubt, it's my Shady Ray shades. I rock the deep, stylish, deep timber, wooden frame glasses, and let me tell you, these things are awesome. Just the last few weeks I've been wearing them, I've gotten a handful of compliments, and there's nothing better to boost your confidence than just looking stylish. These shades are premium polarized sunglasses that won't break the bank, and with over 300,000 five-star ratings, you know they gotta be good, right? And durability, these shades can handle whatever adventure you throw at them. And with their lost and broken protection included, you can pretty much just do whatever. It's awesome. Plus, Shady Rays is offering free shipping and returns, so you can try them out risk-free. And here's a little treat just for you. Go head on over to ShadyRays.com and use our code TNQ for $20 off your next pair of polarized sunglasses. Best deal of the season is just one click away. Go to ShadyRays.com and use our code TNQ.
That's right. It's profound. And, you know, it being, and I use, Bedford, I think the important reason I think the National Monument to D-Day is in Bedford is because I think Bedford is just emblematic of all these communities across the nation that nurtured these citizen soldiers, sailors, airmen, Coast Guardsmen, all of those who were involved in the war effort, and so many of them who never came home, you know, that the profound effect it had on these communities and these families, you know, over 400,000 families during World War II who lost a loved one, or 400,000 who died during the war, you know, and it's when you start looking at these families and that impact. And I'll give you one example here in Bedford, which is I think particularly heartbreaking, is that there was a family, remember there were three sets of brothers who served in the Company A, and Company A was composed of many Bedford boys. There were 37 young men from Bedford in Company A of the 116th, 29th Division. And they, again, were a National Guard unit, and they were the only National Guard unit to go in on the first wave on D-Day, which is why the loss was so significant here in Bedford.
And that's why they were all together, correct?
That's exactly right.
Because we normally wouldn't stack them like that. But because they were guard, that's how that happened?
That's how that happened.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
because,
you.
Because, you know, as you know, most of your other Army units, that you know, people were spread out. They're from all over. But this was a National Guard unit. And so they were all within this, you know, tight-knit communities. And, you know, here in Bedford, particularly, it was a small community. So you knew everybody. I mean, you know, you grew up together. You went to school together. Many times you went to church together, you knew everybody. And so they were like brothers. I mean, this was, and in fact, there were three sets of brothers who served on D-Day morning. And so pretty remarkable when you think about that. They were extraordinarily close. They had trained together for 2 years for this, you know, this one event, you know, that's going to take place. They're kind of the tip of the spear. And so on the morning of June 6, 1944, of course, as they hit the beach, most of these young men never had a chance. I mean, they, from what we can tell, we don't even know if a shot was fired among most of them. Because as you can imagine, as these landing crafts are going in and the ramp goes down, they're bearing the brunt of the German artillery immediately. The German fire is raining down on them. They just didn't have a chance. And it would be a month and a half, really, before this community knew what had happened. They knew where their young men were, where they were serving. They knew D-Day had happened. But they really wouldn't find out any news for about a month and a half. It was mid-July and the telegrams started arriving. And there was a young telegraph operator. Her name was Elizabeth Tay. She was 21 years old. And I can imagine this being your job, where you go in And she worked in a little store. It was a little storefront called Green's Drugstore. And that's where everybody hung out. This is where you got your news every day, your coffee, you know, it's where you saw everybody. It was kind of where you went, you know, it's just that great place to hang out. And you went to Green's Drugstore. And, but that's also where the telegraph machine was set up. So she would go and every morning turn on the telegraph machine to see what messages there were. So it's a Sunday morning. She goes in, Elizabeth turns on the telegraph machine, and suddenly these telegrams start arriving. You know, Bedford, we have casualties. And they start arriving one after another, after another, after another, and they just keep coming. And she realizes something horrible has happened to Company A and to these men. And she's thinking, what do you know, all of these families have to be told this news. And so people start gathering around her and taking the different telegrams to go and bring and deliver this awful news to these families throughout the community. And one of those families, again, Sunday morning, they're getting ready for church. It's the Hoback family. And they are, their church is located right across the road from where their house is. And they get a knock at the door. It's the sheriff who has a telegram. The father opens the door and realizes that their son, Bedford Hoback, his name ironically was Bedford, had been killed on D-Day. And of course, you can imagine the family was devastated. And within the household, this was a household of, they had seven children. And one of those was a 14-year-old. Her name was Lucille. And Lucille was very vividly remembers just the devastation as this news comes in. Everybody from church finds out very quickly. They start coming over to console the family. And they try to get through it the best they can. The next day, they receive a second telegram. And it's news that their other son is missing in action. So their son, Raymond. And they knew. They almost knew instantly that he had been killed. They would find out later. It would be confirmed. Raymond's body was never found. But they would receive a package in the mail several weeks later. And it was a package from another soldier. And they open this package up, and it's Raymond's Bible. And Raymond, when he apparently landed on D-Day and the chaos of the battle, the war there, he had dropped his Bible, had fallen out of his pack and landed in the sand. And this other soldier walking the beach the next day found the Bible, picked it up, and he actually wrote a letter to the family. And he said, you know, I did what any soldier would do. I picked this up. I found it in the sand. Of course, he had no idea what had happened. He just wrote, I hope your son is fine and that you'll get some, you know, basically some news soon, and return the Bible to the family. So this Bible would be the only thing that they had from their son, Raymond, because his body was never recovered. It was something that they treasured deeply. It's actually in our collection now at the National D-Day Memorial. But it's, to me, a very tangible reminder of this loss that families all across the country experienced during the war. You know, here's a family that lost two sons and found that out within 2 days. It's just hard to think about, hard to fathom that.
Terrible. Oh, it's so sad.
War. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stories that we talk about. Most of them have to do with the combat. I think the struggle and the hard part is that when we get back, or what's going on the back home.
Is there something about Elizabeth at your memorial? Do you have a tribute to her?
We do. We tell the story. And what's really great, too, there's also a museum in town where the Green's Drugstore used to be. And it's the Bedford Boys Tribute Center. So guests can visit the memorial and then go down into the museum in town to see the tribute center there. And you can actually see the telegraph machine and everything. So it's very moving. But yeah, it's, you know, these stories just really bring it to life. And we like to tell young people these stories because I think it's when you're able to tell the individual stories that I think young people can understand, well, you know, how the tragedy of war, that it's, you know, it's obviously what was accomplished that day was so very critical. But we also have to think about what was lost that day and to put faces and stories to those those names and to those numbers. And we oftentimes think about D-Day as just numbers. All the, you know, it was a lot of men lost their lives. A lot of people gave their life. I think when you start thinking about these families and these individual stories, it really makes it come home. And I will say we're really proud here at the memorial because when we started building the memorial, we wanted to make sure people knew who they were, who died on D-Day, who were they? And believe it or not, there was nowhere, not even in Normandy, did they have a list of who died on June 6, 1944. It didn't exist. And so we started doing the research early on, trying to determine who died on June 6, 1944. And most people told us it couldn't be done, that it had never been done before. You know, it's very difficult in the chaos of war to track these records, and you know, keeping those types of records was difficult. And then there's, you know, the archival fire in St. Louis in the 70s that, you know, so there was a lot of roadblocks. We've spent over 20 years researching those names. And we have the only name by name listing in the world of those who died on June 6, 1944.
I've heard that story about that fire.
Yeah.
Did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. And it did. It burned up a significant number of World War II records.
All the departments?
You know, Marcus, that's a great question. I'm not real sure. I just know that it did impact a lot of records that had to do from the war.
Because you want to talk about a mystery. That I've heard that story my entire life. We talk about it when we're in the military. I've heard people reference it. I've actually run across a couple of people where their records got burnt.
Yeah. 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 I don't think it was just World War II records. I'm not real sure the extent of it, but it was pretty, it was very bad.
And what you're talking about, the way the kids learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That keeps changing, obviously. And with the new ones on the ground, it's completely different than monuments mean one thing, but they're the way they comprehend stuff. Even all the museums are going to that digital where they can just see it.
Yeah.
But when you said he was Sergeant Slaughter, was he a sergeant? I keep saying that. I hope he was.
Yes, he was.
He was?
Yep.
That's even better.
He was.
Oh,
isn't that great?
Oh, it's even better. I've heard a couple of those guys talk about the opening scene to Saving Private Ryan, and they said that sucker's on point.
Oh, yeah. The veterans have told me the same thing. What they tell me is that the opening scene really is exactly right. What you can't get from watching that is, of course, the true nature of just the sound and the smell of being there. You know, literally the deafening noise of everything that was being unloaded on them, and then just the smell of death. I mean, sadly, just how many gave their lives that day. I mean, so I mentioned that. The research that we've done, it was 4,415 who died on the beaches that day, just that day. We stopped the research at midnight of June the 6th of those who died after that. So we're just talking about June the 6th and that window of time, 4,415 died on that day. And we researched not just the Americans, but the Allies. And so that's it was 2,502 Americans, 1,913 Allies. Gave their lives that day.
I'm sorry, how many Americans was it?
2,502.
Yeah, 2,502 Americans just on June the 6th. So, and then 1,913 Allied. And so we have their names on a wall. When you come to the memorial, you can actually see their names. The monument itself depicts various stages of the invasion, from planning and preparation. We have this beautiful English garden. And then you come into the invasion tableau, which is literally a tableau. It's a pool with a kind of an abstract representation of a Higgins boat with a ramp down, these sculptures in the water depicting the troops coming ashore. We actually have air jets under the water, so it looks like bullets are hitting the water. So it creates a pretty stirring moment where you're looking at this and you're looking up at what looks like the German bunkers. And so just thinking about on Omaha Beach, for example, you know, that you're crossing, you know, basically what amounts to about 6 football fields of sand, trying to get to the seawall. under this intense fire, and you've got these bluffs that are 100 feet up. It's incredible to think about. So it gives you a bit of a feeling of that when you're at the memorial to kind of see what they were up against. And I think that's important.
Are you tired of waking up and feeling like you've just been in a sauna? Well, say hello to Ghostbed, where great sleep is not just a dream, it is a guarantee. As someone who used to dread bedtime just because of overheating, I can't help but sing praises for Ghostbed. Crafted with over 20 years of expertise by a family-owned team, these mattresses are like a breath of fresh air, literally. Picture this, you're slipping into bed, and instead of feeling like you're melting, you're greeted by a refreshing coolness. Thanks to Ghostbed's patented cooling technology, and trust me, this is a game changer. That's not even the best part, though. You don't have to take my word for it. With Ghostbed's 101 night sleep trial, you can cozy up risk-free and experience the magic just for yourself. Plus, with free shipping and most items shipping within 24 hours, the dreamy sleep experience is just one click away. Now, let's talk savings. Head on over to ghostbed.com/TNQ and snag a whopping 50% off site-wide with code TNQ. Yep, you heard that right. That's 50% off. Ready to upgrade your sleep game? Say goodbye to sweaty nights and say hello to Ghostbed. Your future's well-rested self will thank you. That is ghostbed.com/TNQ.
So are y'all involved at all with the memorial in Normandy?
We do work with them quite a bit. I mean, we've taken groups over. We have a lot of wonderful partnerships in Normandy with different organizations, from tour groups to, you know, tour companies to different museums that we work with, the cemetery and others. And so we certainly have great partnerships. And that, you know, again, it's important because we're all in this together to tell these stories. And so the more we can work together to make sure that these stories are told, I think that's incredibly important. And, you know, Marcus, you also mentioned the younger generation and trying to tell these stories to that generation, because they are so, you know, tech savvy and, you know, so the way you tell stories kind of has to change. So we do that too. We're working on a lot of virtual reality, augmented reality ways for young people when they come to the memorial to, you know, to not only tour and see the memorial, but also to experience it in different ways, the story, so that, they can, I don't know, engage, so we can engage them, I think, in a way that kind of meet them where they are.
Yeah, for sure. For our listeners, because we do have some, you know, a big demographic of listeners that are young, early 20s, that kind of age group. Can you explain what the mission of D-Day was for them?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. So D-Day was critical. I mean, this was going to be the turning point of the war in Western Europe. So it was Operation Overlord, which was to basically invade German-occupied France. So and basically that's the doorway to getting to Germany. And so it was incredibly important. You know, D-Day necessarily wasn't the absolute costliest battle of the war in terms of casualties. It was pretty close and probably really does, probably is. But I think what we argue is the most important from a military perspective, because everything hinged on this. I mean, it was a pivotal event in the war to destroy the German army in Western Europe, to destroy the Nazi regime. Because by moving forward, you were going to be able to get into Germany and finally put an end to the war. It was going to cripple Germany, essentially. So they just had to take those beaches. Had it failed, the consequences would have been pretty dire. I mean, really, you know, the British morale would have been crushed at that point. I'm not sure they could have done anything else after D-Day. I think this was the British's last great effort. From an American standpoint, Americans may have been in it alone after D-Day had it failed and probably wouldn't have been able to regroup for another year to launch an invasion. Germany would have gotten, you know, certainly empowered by that. Their final solution probably would have continued on and they probably would have met all their goals with that. And then they would continue to develop some pretty significant technology in the way of these, you know, V1 and V2 rockets, things like that. So the consequences were dire. This had to happen. They had to succeed. And, you know, you look at General Eisenhower and I think about here he was 53 years old, I believe, at the time of the invasion. He's commanding this, you know, over 3 million men involved in this effort. And the amount of stress you think about that had to be on this man as he is ensuring the success of this invasion had to be pretty amazing. Think about he was 53. I think he was smoking like 4 packs of unfiltered Camel cigarettes a day, sleeping 3 hours a night. I mean, really, the weight of the world was literally on his shoulders because, you know, if it failed, it was really on him. What I love about General Eisenhower is that he was willing to take full responsibility if it did fail. He could have pointed the finger at anybody, but he actually even wrote a letter, basically, and had it in his pocket that if D-Day failed, he was accepting full responsibility for it. I think that was pretty amazing. So he was the perfect general at the perfect time to lead this. And I think because of that and because of the determination and training that went into this invasion, it succeeded.
So do you know how many ships went out to sea for this, to allies and American?
Yeah, over 5,000 vessels involved in the invasion. So it's an incredible amount of manpower and arsenal, I should say, involved. So 5,000 ships, 11,000 aircraft just on D-Day alone, 150,000 troops, over 150,000 landing on June the 6th alone. It's incredible. And one of the reasons why the invasion was kind of pushed, it was originally they were trying to have it in May, mainly was because they still needed more equipment. I mean, they needed more landing crafts. They needed to make sure they had plenty of vessels and aircraft to be able to launch this invasion. So that's one reason it didn't happen until June. You know, Stalin had been pushing for the invasion to happen sooner. He's, of course, one of the big three in terms of the Allies. And at that point, the Russian army was really fighting the bulk of the Germans. You know, they were taking some pretty heavy losses. And so they couldn't keep doing that. And that's why he was pushing for this to happen sooner. But it would it was actually set for June the 5th. And the weather was so poor on June the 5th that they had to delay it a day. And that's why June the 6th became known as D-Day. That's a great indication of how important this invasion was. There were many D-Days during World War II. This became known as the D-Day. And that's how we know it today, as, you know, June 6th, 1944 was the D-Day of the war.
I tell you what, there's so many stories that come out. We're talking about Band of Brothers and every one of those units have something. That I don't know what it is about those guys and the way they had to fight, the uniform, whatever it was, but it captures me. I don't watch movies on the wars I was in. I don't know for whatever reason, but those guys, man, they were something.
Are there any other movies or anything that you recommend people to watch to have a visual of what happened?
Oh gosh. Yeah. Well, like you said, you know, the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan is very important. The Longest Day is actually a very good movie for explaining the invasion. I mean, it was made, in the 1960s, I believe. I can't remember the date, but it's actually a very good film for showing the complexity of the invasion, because I think sometimes we get very hyper-focused on the troops landing on the beaches, but it's so important to, you know, the paratroopers, the glider forces, the Navy. You know, if it had been for the Navy on D-Day, There's a lot that was going wrong. D-Day was not guaranteed to be successful. And we look at how the Navy stepped up, you know, some of those destroyers almost grounding themselves to get as close to the beaches as possible to provide cover fire when they realized things were going poorly on the beaches. you know, the Marcus, even the predecessor to the Navy SEALs, the Naval Combat Demolition units on D-Day, who had to go in first to try to, you know, take care of the obstacles on the beaches. There's so many complex things happening. The resistance movement that's happening in the months leading up to D-Day, which, by the way, had a lot of women involved in the resistance movement who were risking their lives to go out and take care of the bridges and, different communication lines and things like that so that the Germans couldn't communicate. There's so many elements to D-Day. But yes, their Longest Day is actually a pretty good film for that to look at some of those different complexities. Yeah.
So what do y'all do for the anniversary?
Oh, goodness. I love the anniversaries because it really brings, I get a little sad now because I've gone from being at the memorial when we had hundreds of World War II veterans with us to being happy when we have just a few because there's so few left. And so as we're preparing for the 80th anniversary, we have the opportunity for World War II veterans to come and to register with us. They're going to be treated like royalty that they are because we can't wait to recognize them. And we have over a dozen who are registered so far for the 80th. So I'm excited. They're all over 100 years old.
Wow.
So, oh, I mean, it's pretty remarkable when you think about that. But they're coming. They're exciting. We have one who's 106, by the way. So it's just terrific. I mean, we do a lot. We have living history on site. We're actually going to have an actual Higgins boat on site. There's only, I believe, 8 of those left in the world. So you can actually see one of the Higgins boats that carried the troops to shore. We're going to have a number of vehicles, like a dock, that was used. We have a flyover. So we actually have Whiskey 7, which dropped paratroopers over St. Mary Galice on D-Day, flying over and part of our ceremony, plus a number of other vintage aircraft, including a P-51 and others. We do all kinds of things. We involve all of the embassies, and so all of the Allied embassies will have representation and will be with us. So it's just an important event to recognize those veterans who remain with us and to let them know how much we appreciate them, what they did, and that their story is going to live on. We're going to make sure that people hear these stories. And, it's so gratifying to see over the years when we had so many veterans who used to volunteer, of course, at the memorial and tell their stories. It was great to finally see veterans open up and share their stories. And I can't tell you how many times I took families on a tour with their World War II veteran, and being at the memorial, that veteran would start to open up about what really happened. And the family's just sitting there incredulous because they had never heard these stories before, and this was, would be 60 years later, these stories are coming out and they're like, they never talked about it or I never heard this story before. It's the memorial, I think, is important because it gave veterans the freedom and the ability, I think, to finally share. Because I think so many of them felt guilty when they came back that their friends didn't. I think to be able to talk to students and to share what happened, they realized how important that was because that's how they could honor their comrades, is to make sure that their stories are all told. And so it's been so gratifying to do that, to collect their oral histories. We do plan on having a museum. We actually have a small one. It's our education. We have Quonset huts right now. Our Quonset huts have some of our artifacts in it. But we are going to be building a French village, which will have an education center in it to house our artifacts. We have over 15,000 incredible artifacts. And so we're doing in the middle of a capital campaign for some of those things now. But so important to us. And right now we just keep. And what I love about the memorial, too, is that it's really for all of our veterans. I can't tell you how many veterans I've met from Iraq or Afghanistan and others who actually came to the memorial. I met a gentleman some years ago. He was, I think, on his fourth deployment and he lived in Maryland, and he drove down to Virginia. And he said, he told me, he said, I come here every time before I'm deployed and before I go, because, and he stares at the wall with all the names on it. He said, they came before me and they inspire me and they give me hope that, you know, I'm doing what needs to be done, and I'm doing, you know, serving my country and following in some pretty amazing footsteps. And so it's, I think, a place of solemnity, of reflection, and a place that's very cathartic for a lot of our veterans. We do honor flights here regularly. We just had an honor flight of, like, a week ago. It was all Vietnam veterans. And we make sure we give them a great tour. We feed them, we give them a hero's welcome. And then a lot of times they come to the memorial first, and then they go to Washington, D.C. They visit all of the sites there, and then they come back here and we do kind of a wrap up with them where we feed them lunch and everything. And we work with a number of honor flights to do that and honor them. It's just so important to thank our veterans, all of our veterans. And that's what we tell young people. Whenever you see a veteran, be sure you shake their hand, say thank you for what you've done. And that's part of our message to young people.
As we gear up for Military Appreciation Month, I just want to take a second to give a big shout out and heartfelt thanks to all the incredible military members and their families out there. You all go truly above and beyond, and your sacrifices do not go unnoticed. This month, Navy Federal Credit Union is honoring those who serve with exclusive benefits and offers. Navy Federal goes the extra mile for its members, offering exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower you and help you reach your financial goals. And here's a special offer just for you. Join Navy Federal between May 1st and 31st and get $50 when you open a credit card. Head over to NavyFederal.org/celebrate to discover all of the amazing offers available during Military Appreciation Month and beyond. With Navy Federal, you get 24/7 support from their U.S.-based customer member service team. Plus, they offer resources like best cities after service and also best careers for military spouses, just to support the military families. All of the branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. And many of the Navy Federal employees are also military family members, reservists, or veterans themselves, so they understand what you're going through. So this Military Appreciation Month, join Navy Federal Credit Union and let them serve you just as you've served us. Thank you for your dedication, your sacrifices, and your service. You are appreciated. Visit NavyFederal.org today. Navy Federal is insured by the NCUA and Equal Housing Lender.
I love that. And I love Honor Flight. What they do is so freaking cool. If you don't know about Honor Flight, our listeners, research it. It is one of the coolest, or volunteer. Even you can go to your local airport and just greet them when they're coming back. It's a really cool organization.
We love working with the Honor Flights. It's so fun. And, you know, it's to see veterans be recognized in that way, and to know, you know, so many of them. I mean, so many of our Vietnam veterans, for example, who were here recently, had not been to DC. They had not seen the Vietnam Wall. So to be able to just take part in that and know that they will see that they, you know, they are recognized, they are, you know, admired, and you know, I can tell you, it just means a lot to them. And, you know, we love doing it. We love it.
It's awesome. So if someone wants to come visit your memorial, where do they fly into? How do they get there? Where do they stay? What's a day look like?
Yeah. So, you know, that's probably the one thing being in Bedford, is that we're a little out of the way, but not much. I mean, we're only about 3.5 hours outside of Washington, D.C. Most people, when they fly into the Roanoke, Virginia airport or Lynchburg airport, which is only 30 minutes from us. We're on a major thoroughfare 460, which is easy to get to. So, you know, it sounds like we're in the middle of nowhere, but it's really easy to get to. And it's a beautiful drive. We're surrounded by the Blue Ridge Mountains here. It's gorgeous. There's lots of other things to see and do while people are here. We're very close, for example, to Thomas Jefferson's Monticello and Poplar Forest and all these neat historic attractions. And so a lot of people, Appomattox is 45 minutes from us. So if you love the Civil War, you know, there's a lot of history here. And so people will oftentimes come and spend a couple of days to just enjoy the wealth of history that's just right in this area. But we encourage people to come and, you know, spend the day at the memorial. There's a lot to see and take in. And it's a moving site. I think, you know, Bob Slaughter, Sergeant Slaughter, said it best when this was being built. He said, if you can't put it on Omaha Beach, this is the place it needs to be. And I think because, you know, this community did endure such loss. And so there's this kind of embracing of this memorial and what it means to the nation. Yeah.
That's awesome. I want to go. Babe, let's go one day.
You should.
I was just thinking.
On your bucket list.
Is there a World War II memorial route throughout the United States?
Is there?
I don't know. I was just thinking about that when she was talking about it.
Well, definitely.
Like a World War II pilgrimage, like do the walk, hit all the memorial sites.
Yeah. We're in Virginia. We're part of the Virginia World War II Heritage Alliance, and so there's these different World War II related museums that you can follow throughout Virginia and go to, which is pretty wonderful. And so, you know, like if you wanted to learn more about MacArthur or go to, there's just so many, the Holocaust Museum in Richmond, Virginia. There's all these different sites you can go to learn about more. So we partner together quite a bit. We have done programming and work together with the museum in New Orleans, the World War II Museum in New Orleans.
Oh, that was great.
And so, yeah.
I've been to that one. That one is amazing.
It is. So there's lots of opportunities, you know, where, again, we work together and collaborate and that's really terrific. Cause again, we're all trying to do the same thing. This is, an important mission and, I think a critical one to make sure that, that these stories are remembered. And so, yeah.
It's always better when you have more people that work together and you make something just huge. So all of these different things working together.
You help each other. You spread the word about, you know, what you're doing and why it's important. And, that's been fantastic for us because, you know, a lot of people have not heard about us, because we are small, because we're not government funded or, you know, we're privately funded. So it's all through donations. Sometimes it's hard to market yourself, you know, the way you'd like, cause you know, money is limited, obviously. So, but I've always been amazed at the grassroots effort that took place here and how these veterans really refused to give up because they had a lot against them and trying to make this happen. And, you know, it was very ambitious, but amazing to me. In fact, one of the early funders that Bob Slaughter was able to get was Charles Schulz. So everybody knows Charles Schulz probably through Snoopy.
Oh, everyone.
Famous peanut.
If they don't know that name, they know exactly that tone.
Yeah.
Or that tune. Excuse me, that tune.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Have you thought about taking it back to Congress and saying, look what we have built. Can you help us out here?
You know, we did a couple of years ago. Well, I'll say a couple. I guess that's been over. Oh, gosh. It's been a while now. In 2010, when the recession hit, things were tough. You know, the big recession hit, money was really tight. And we actually went to the National Park Service to see if there could be a study done to kind of fall under the Park Service umbrella. Of course, the study took a while. It was like a 2-year or 3-year study. And the more we looked at that, the more we realized, and basically the Park Service came back to us and said, you know, you all are doing really fine on your own. You know, what we were doing from an education standpoint was just so impressive to them. And quite honestly, I would say this, very diplomatically, but as a private entity, we're able to do a lot more in many ways. The Park Service was concerned that if they took over, for example, that our site would become seasonal since it's primarily outdoors, that a lot of the education programs would go away because they wouldn't be able to fund those. Whereas we're able to, as a private foundation, really go out there, fundraise for all these different initiatives that we're doing. Our education program is stellar. We do virtual programming all over the country. We have all of our on-site programming. We're doing a lot. And the concern was that some of that would go away because you'd be a little bit more tied to different regulations and things like that. So they basically said they didn't think it was a good fit, and we kind of agreed, and so it kind of worked out, and we continue just to fundraise on our own.
Well, good for you for making it grow. You've actually taken something from a seed, and it's grown into this beautiful thing, and sounds like it's continuing to grow, so...
It is. We're really excited. We've got some wonderful plans for the future, and, I'm very proud. We so miss the veterans, but I know they are so proud of what has been achieved here, and they're so happy. I can hear Bob now. I think it has exceeded his expectations, and so that means a lot. And to be able to tell all of these stories, and it was important to them. One of my favorite veterans was. She was actually a woman who served as a flight nurse on D-Day. And these are the kind of stories that I think are so important because there are so many misconceptions about D-Day, including that a lot of people think there were no black troops there, for example, or their women were not involved and all that. So, we spend a lot of time making sure that people know the complexity of the invasion and all those who are involved. And, Evelyn Kowalczyk was a flight nurse who went in on D+3. So she came in 3 days later on Omaha Beach. She was one of only 500 flight nurses during the war. And this was a brand new, learning to basically evacuate troops by air was brand new. So she was a pioneer. And she landed on D-Day and ended up spending the entire day where she landed on D+3, spent the entire day in a foxhole because she was being shot at. This was dangerous work. And literally they would load troops onto these C-47s, fly out and then come back and get more. And, it was so important to her to make sure people understood these stories, and so she spent, even though it was very hard for her to talk about, because she used to say, she said, we weren't trained to deal with the injuries that we had to deal with. It was awful. And as you can imagine, she had her own PTSD from all of that. But those are the stories that are so important. So the memorial is a great teaching tool. It's there for people to learn. It's beautiful, but it's really the stories. It's these individual stories that make it come to life. And that's what we continue to share.
I love that.
Thank you for doing that. Thank you for your sacrifice and service to our country. We're going to do what we can to help y'all out with that.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to make it out there. I don't know when we will make it out there, but we will.
If she's saying that on the air, that means we're gonna
go.
We'll be now.
We've got it on tape.
That's right.
We are going.
Check
so, how can our listeners learn more? Can you give your website or y'all on social media?
Yes. We're on all the different social media channels. dday.org, just dday.org, and it tells all about our organization, how we came to be. Events that are coming up. We do events all year, not just the big commemoration. We always have, huge Memorial Day events and Veterans Day events where we recognize all of our veterans. The big one, of course, this year is the 80th anniversary. So it's not too late to plan a trip to Bedford and honor those veterans who are going to be with us. It's going to be absolutely amazing. So if you can't go to Normandy, come to Bedford. But it's going to be terrific. But yes, dday.org. And of course, we have a Facebook page as well, and all the different. And we have a podcast of our own called Someone Talked. So
I love that.
If you like podcasts, you listen to this and you love podcasts, we have one as well that we enjoy doing.
That's great.
You said that perfectly, too. If you can't make it to Normandy, it's the 80th anniversary, then there are some places here that you can make it. Does the Patriot Guard ride through y'all?
Yes. Yes,
now they're very involved. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. When they fire up and go thunder rolling, it's something to see them come in.
It's wonderful. And you know, when we have our honor flights, they're very involved. When we have, a funeral that might, you know, we've had,
for example,
we've had some MIAs who've been identified in the past who have, and there's been like a ceremony in Bedford, for example, and they've been involved. We love working with our Rolling Thunder groups and Run for the Wall, all of those are so involved.
Rolling Thunder. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. That one too. Yeah.
We work a lot. In fact, in May, we have several hundred motorcycles coming through for Run for the Wall on their way to DC.
Oh, that's always a treat.
We saw that
one time. We were, by total accident, we were in DC for something else, and we could hear it from our hotel room. Yes. Remember, we walked outside. We were like, what is that?
Tell you something, all those veterans on iron horses rolling in. you can't impressive. See them forever.
Yeah.
You can just hear them coming.
Right.
That's really cool. Oh, and I tell you what, when we all get together like that in events like that, celebrations, it's really a good time.
Definitely.
It's really a good time.
One other thing. So are you partnering with schools for education, or how can people just, whether it's a teacher or school, how can they get information from you?
Yes, they can just go to our website at dday.org, and there's a whole section, education section, that you can click on, and there's a section for teachers. We have resources on there that teachers can use. And like I said, we do a lot of virtual programming with schools all across the country. So, for example, if we did one recently for a school in New York, one in Chicago, if you can't get to us, we can get to you virtually. It's wonderful. We're able to show the students some of the artifacts that we have and tell the story. We can even take them on a virtual tour of the memorial. And the students really enjoy it. So absolutely, if there's a teacher out there wondering how they can access that, go to our website. You can call our education department. All of that information is on the website, and we'd love to do a program. That's what we're about. It's the next generation. We got to make sure the next generation can pass these stories on. So important.
Go find a World War II veteran this D-Day and get a picture with them.
Yeah.
Just go find one somewhere. Make a point to do that and get a picture with them and post it, and then or send them a message. Tell them thanks. We love y'all.
That's right.
I have two more questions for you.
Veterans.
Have you ever heard of Rishi Sharma?
We had
him on our podcast probably a year and a half ago. He is a young man, Hunter's age, that he has dedicated his life to interviewing World War II veterans. And he lives out of his car and travels the United States, and he puts these stories on YouTube. So
that's great.
It's really cool. And they're unedited. It's like a full, sometimes it's 3 hours long.
You're not going to believe this kid.
And you can.
He's got some files.
You can look this guy up, Rishi Sharma, R-I-S-H-I. Sharma, S-H-A-R-M-A, and his YouTube is incredible. It's just this wealth of information and stories, and it's just
that's fantastic.
It's just him doing it. He's just got a camera, and he's doing it really well. So I was wondering if you heard of him. And my other is, have you heard of the Bent Prop Project?
No, I've not.
So that, when you said the MIAs had been identified, yes. Bent Prop does that. They will take information that you have of an MIA, and they go over, and they've got a team of like archaeologists and anthropologists, like all the
scuba divers, everything.
And they will look for remains to bring back and to identify and bring back. It's really incredible. So two things I wanted to see if those were on your radar.
I'm glad you shared that. It's so important, the work that they do. I mean, to be able to bring them home is so important.
Yeah. And, well, we love what you're doing.
And yes, thank you again.
We are excited to go visit you one day.
Well, please do. And to all your listeners, too, if you can't get to us, I will say that we are live streaming our 80th anniversary event. So, again, you can go to our website. And especially if you have a World War II veteran in your community, it'll be a very it's professionally done, the live stream, so that you can maybe fire up your computer and have that veteran watch so that they can be recognized. We're doing watch parties all across the country too. So that's different retirement facilities and things like that can tune in and watch it live. So it's all on our website, but yeah, definitely if you can't be here in person, then check it out live that day on June the 6th.
Awesome. Thank you for what you're doing.
Yep, God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed talking with you.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.